All right, so we're in our final days of Chodesh Nisan now. I just want to share one more point about Chodesh Nisan. We didn't get much time to talk about Nisan because Pesach was overtook our schedule, but Rosh Chodesh Iyar is this Wednesday and Thursday, so we have a few days left of Nisan. So I'm just going to say an idea of Nisan that will kind of bring us out into the rest of the year. You know, when Nisan comes, we always talk about nature first. Now, outside in nature, as I walked into this house, I saw the azaleas outside blossoming. Gorgeous. Yeah, beautiful. Really beautiful. She has so many out there, too. Really beautiful. And we're in a beautiful time in nature where we have long days. It's sunny. Driving up this year, it was actually sunny outside for the first time, I think, since we started. I have to find the house in the light, which is actually feels different for me. Usually I find it in the dark. The weather is supposed to be nice. A little cold today, but it should be nice weather. We have flowers out. We have leaves. The world's alive again. You know, we've been discussing how the seasons kind of flow this entire time we've had this year, and we've seen how everything kind of died and became dormant. Now things are starting to perk up. Pesach's over, but we never say Yontif finishes. And Rav Huttner always says that you say Yontif is added to yourself. We've added a Yontif to ourselves now. Every Yontif forms a person, adds to a person's, you know, character and to our personalities. So Pesach, even though we have passed it this year, we're not done with Pesach. Pesach has been added to us. So I want to find, there's a lasting message of Pesach to take with us for the year, which I think is very much seen out in nature at this point in the year, and can bring a lot to us to understand what our job is in the coming months. When you sit outside in Nisan, you know, when during Pesach I love sitting outside. When I do my learning, I'll learn outside of my porch. We have a screened-in porch. I love sitting out there. And this time of year you sit out there, and you hear a lot of, you know, hustle and bustle in nature. Hear birds chirping and flying around, and there's squirrels running around, and there's rabbits, and then you hear the wind blowing against all the leaves rustling. It's loud outside. And these are sounds of nature. Everything is alive, everything, there's crickets at night, not tonight because it's too cold, but the crickets are out again. My kids say, what's that noise outside? And there's things happening outside now. And this is something the Gemara describes. The Gemara says that the crops start singing in Nisan. What does it mean a crop sings? It's because the wind blows through the crops, now they're grown in the fields, and the crops rustle against one another. So you have the noise of the crops in the fields. It's actually a pasuk in Tehillim. It says in Tehillim, Lav Shukaram Hatzon. It's speaking at this time of year. This time of year in Nisan, the sheep now are covered in their wool. Vamakim Yatfu Bar. And the valleys are draped in produce. Yisro'au Af Yashiru. You know, it makes noise and it sings. And the Gemara explains, Mefarshim explain, it means that the actual produce is singing. So it's part of the idea of the noise, of the hustle and bustle of Nisan. And again, the singing is because as the wind blows, everything rustles around. That's the noise we hear. It's very opposite in the winter. You go outside in the winter, and there's like an eerie silence out there. You walk outside after a snowstorm when nobody's around. It's just quiet, you know. Even the wind, it blows, but there's nothing for it to blow because the trees have no leaves on them, the animals aren't out, nothing's out. So, but in the summer, in the spring especially, there's a lot of sound in nature. The Pasuk in Shir HaShirim, it says, Am kinea sasa v'avar, you know, the winter has passed. Hageshem cholaf halach lo, the rain has already gone. Eretz Yisrael, it only rains in the wintertime. Hanitzanim niru ba'aretz, you know, these blossoms are appearing in the land. Es hazamir higia, the time of song has arrived. The kola tornish mabiarsenu, and the sound of the turtle dove is heard in our land. So it talks a lot about the winter has passed, and we have the time for singing and the time for sound, the sound of the turtle dove. And Mitzudas David explains, the parish in Tehillim, he explains that the idea of the winter is a mashal for the slavery of Mitzrayim, and the avodas perech, you know, the terrible labor of Mitzrayim. And then he says that the idea of the bird singing, Esa Zamir, the time for song arriving and the songbirds arriving, that is a mashal for the freedom from Mitzrayim. It's also described by this noise, this chirping in nature, this excitement in nature which is out there, that's a mashal for Yetzias Mitzrayim. This is the sounds of spring. So with this picture in mind, I want to understand a little bit, what's the symbolism, what's the significance of the sounds of spring out there during this time of year? Okay, everything in nature has relevance to the time of year in terms of our understanding of the Torah and the Jewish calendar. So what is it about the sounds of Nisan that are left after Pesach and the fact that nature has woken up and make all these beautiful chirping and nature sounds outside? That's our question. So I want to start with a very famous quote from the Zohar. The Zohar says, many Chassidish Sfarim quote this idea, that when the Jews were in Mitzrayim, that was the Golus of Jews, we were exiled, and that was also called Golus HaDibor, the concept of speech was an exile. That's what Zohar says. So being in Mitzrayim was called, the Jews were in exile, and the idea of Dibor, speech, was in exile. Very interesting comment, what that means exactly. And it makes sense that we should leave Mitzrayim in a season where there's loud noises outside. Because if Mitzrayim was considered the exile of speech, when you leave Mitzrayim, you should be hearing the sound. That kind of flows together. We don't know what it means exactly, we'll have to explain that, but that it kind of fits. So when we think about it, this is actually a very broad theme of Yetzias Mitzrayim, the concepts of speech, of sound. And there's a lot of examples to this, which you all have heard of before, but never actually put together until right now. And you'll see how these are so obvious to us, but we never actually think about them. The Yom Tov that we celebrate in Nisan is called Pesach. The word Pesach has been said to mean Pesach, the mouth that speaks. Pesach, the mouth that speaks. Paro, the letters of Paro could be rearranged to spell Pe-Ra, bad mouth, the bad mouth. So Pesach is the speaking mouth, Paro is the bad mouth. The Jews had to build two cities, Pisom and Ramses. Pisom, P-Som, is the closed mouth. That's the word Pisom means. Pisom is the closed mouth. When they left Mitzrayim, it says they left from a place called Pi-Achiros, which literally means the freed mouth. And Rashi actually explains it's the same city as Pisom. The Pisom was called Pisom, and then it was changed to Pi-Achiros, which means it was the closed mouth, now it's the free mouth. So we see a lot of this idea of the mouth when it comes to Mitzrayim. When the Jews left Mitzrayim, where did they go? They went to the Yam Suf, and it says that they gathered Besfas Hayam. So we translate that as the bank of the ocean, the bank of the sea, but Sfas Safa means the lips. They're on the lips of the sea. That's the term used, Sfas Hayam, the lips of the sea. They went out into the Midbar, which translates as the desert, but Midbar is the same letters as Medaber, as speech, to speak. We know that the mitzvah and Pesach of Haggadah, Haggadah means to tell, with the concept called Marvel Saper, that the more we speak is considered Meshubach, that's the best. Matzah is referred to as Lechem Oni, which means the bread upon which you speak. Lechem she'onim alav dvarim harbe. It's the bread upon which we speak many, many words, Chazal say. It says in Tehillim, it's actually the Shir Shalom of Thursday. It says, Eidos behosev samu b'seisam v'es Mitzrayim, that you put testimony in Yosef when he went out to rule Mitzrayim. Svas adati eshma, he heard a language that he did not know. So Mitzrayim associates with language. And then we say in that same Kapitel Tehillim, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Ma'alchem Eretz Mitzrayim, I am Hashem, your God, that took you out of Mitzrayim, Harchev Picha V'yamalei, open your mouth and I will fill it. So opening up your mouth, that has to do with leaving Mitzrayim. And then we have in Hallel. In Hallel we say, B'seisram Mitzrayim, Beis Yaakov Me'am Loez. When the Jews left Mitzrayim, Beis Yaakov left the Am Loez. Loez means the strange, the foreign-speaking nation. Which is a funny way to describe Mitzrayim. Of all things, they speak a different language than us, is the description given, but there's this idea of speech. And then, like my final point, I'm sure there's more of these things, my final point would be that we know Moshe Rabbeinu had a speech impediment. Lo ish devar manochi, he says, I'm not a man of words, Moshe Rabbeinu. So these are many examples, I'm sure there are even more, where you find this concept of speech associated with Mitzrayim, and Yetzias Mitzrayim, and Moshe Rabbeinu, and Pesach. And all these things we've all heard of before, but when you put them all together, it really strikes us as something interesting, that there's so much about speech in this story. So we have to figure out what's the message of it all. What does it all mean? So Rashi tells us, as I mentioned before, that Pisom, the city of Pisom, which is one of the cities the slaves had to build up, that changed names to Pi-Achiros. That's what Rashi tells us in the Chumash. Which means that when they entered Mitzrayim, it was something of a closed mouth, Pisom, a closed mouth. When they're ready to leave, their mouth was freed. So the idea of speech was freed as they left Mitzrayim. That's why the city changed from Pisom to Pi-Achiros. At that point, they enter into the Midbar, which is the place of speech. Midbar, Medaber, the place of speech. So the way I'd like to understand this is that there's a difference between what we would call being suppressed, suppression, and then expression. Which I believe are really two opposite words in English. There's suppression and expression. You can be suppressed, you can be enslaved, or you can be able to express. What does that mean exactly? So let's take it back to a very important piece of Bereishis for a second. Now the Torah tells us that when Hashem made Adam, He gave him He made a body of Afrim and Adama, from the dust of the earth. And then it says, "Vipav Avin Nishmas Chayim," that Hashem breathed into Adam the soul of life. And then it says, "Vihi Adam Nefesh Chaya," that Adam became a living nefesh, living being. And Targum Onkelos has a very famous translation there. Targum Onkelos translates into Aramaic. What does it mean that Adam became a nefesh chaya? He says Adam became a ruach ma'ala, a speaking spirit, a speaking being. And we know that speech is really the hallmark of the human being. You know, animals might communicate, but they don't speak. I'll tell you what that means in a minute, what I mean by that. But animals don't have conversations. Animals can't express themselves. Animals can communicate. You know, there's danger there, there's food there. They have certain mating calls. They can reach out to each other for mating purposes. But ultimately, animals don't speak. They communicate, but they don't have any way to express themselves. There's no expression of their feelings or their thoughts or their emotions or their unique potential. Animals, they just communicate about life's essentials, and that's as far as their concept of speech goes. The human being, which is defined by the neshama being fused with the guf, the human being is able to be in ruach ma'ala, speaking spirit. We speak. And this fusion of the guf and the neshama, this is the advantage of the human being over the animal. That because we have a neshama that fuses into our guf, we're able to speak. Able to express. Koch HaDibor. The idea of Dibor is you can take things which are totally from the world of thought or of emotion and you can express them. The word in Lashon HaKodesh, Dibor, has the same letters as Davar, as an object, because what Dibor does, it takes something which is kind of like, you know, abstract or floaty or out there, and then it solidifies it into like something real. So we can have lots of ideas in our heads, but we have to be able to actually express them for them to be in reality. We say very often, "Let me speak this through with you so I can concretize my ideas." That's something that we do all the time, because I have to be able to take my floaty abstract thoughts and make them into reality. Thoughts are really in the world of potential, but they're not real quite yet. When you speak, you're expressing something into the world of reality. That's what you're doing. And to take it even further, you know, the idea of speech, we would say, I would translate it more, let's call it expression. And it means that we have so much inside ourselves that we want to be able to express. We want to be able to bring it out. And we've spoken about bringing potential out into reality, and that's what expression. Expression means I'm going to express myself. I have a lot of potential inside. I want to be able to do this and accomplish this and share this and connect in this way. And that potential has to be brought out in reality through the idea of expression. I express myself. Self-expression. And that's the idea. When a person's enslaved, they can't express themselves. And let me define that for a second. You know, we talk about slavery. Slavery for us is a dirty word. You know, we don't like the idea of slavery. And it's true, because slaves in history, more often than not, were tormented and persecuted and tortured, and they lived horrible lives. There is a concept, though. I mean, the Torah does support certain forms of slavery, but it tells us how to treat a slave. And slaves can be treated very well. You know, the Gemara talks about certain slaves of the great Amorayim, which are very happy to be slaves to these great tzaddikim, because, you know, Eliezer ibn Avraham was very happy to be a slave to Avraham Avinu. He didn't have any problem with that. Because why, when your master is a kind, righteous master, then you don't have the issue of being persecuted or tormented. But yet, slavery is still a negative thing. I mean, even if you were to take away all the torture and the torment and the mistreatment, we still view slavery as a bad thing. And what's the real tragedy of slavery? So I think the biggest tragedy of slavery, again, assuming that you have a nice master, let's assume that for a second, is that a slave can never express his or her own self. A slave will work for 60, 70, 80, 90 years, and it's all for a master. A slave, whatever they do, it's not their own self-expression or self-accomplishment, because they do as they're told and finished. There's no creative license for a slave. They cannot make their own decisions and fulfill themselves. So slaves are suppressed, meaning even if they have a nice master, their potential is suppressed. It's held back. They can't be who they want to be. They can't do what they want to do. They can't have any sense of self-fulfillment. Whereas somebody who's free, the freedom allows them to express who they really are. That's what freedom does. You can bring out your own potential, work for yourself, fulfill yourself through freedom. And that, I think, on one level, is this concept of Dibor. We talk about Dibor, not just physically I'm speaking with my mouth, but Dibor meaning self-expression. Now, in a slave, when they're a slave, cannot express themselves. When a slave becomes free, they can now express themselves. That's what they can do. A slave, when they're still enslaved, only is able to fulfill the master's dreams, not their own dreams. When a person is freed, he or she can fulfill his or her dreams. You can fulfill your own self, your own life. You can accomplish it for yourself. So the idea of the chirus from Mitzrayim, the freedom, was not just, okay, now we're out of our shackles and we can do as we please, but it was that now you can actually express who you really are. Until now, for those centuries we were slaves in Mitzrayim, we were suppressed people. We couldn't bring out who we really are. We couldn't bring out our potential. We were stuck. Now our whole lives were lived totally stuck and enslaved to Paro. But now that we're free, we can bring out all the potential from our hearts and from our minds and from who we are into the world reality. And we can really be the nation that we're cut out to be because now we've been freed. So now we can express ourselves. I'd like to give a mushal. I think we can understand a mushal to help us understand this concept. Now, very often you'll buy, let's say, a new electronic, right? You buy this thing over here. And it comes with a manual about this thick. So usually we toss the manual aside and we start pushing the buttons and we kind of figure out what to do with it. Usually we do. The thing is, if we read the manual, well, then we'd know how to use it much better. We don't. So I know there's like, 16 features on this thing that I don't know what to do with. But I just ignore it and I just push record and I push stop and then done. But if I really cared to bring out the full potential of this device, I would read the manual. And then I would know exactly what each button does and each feature does. This thing's only working to half its potential right now because I don't know what to do with it, which is fine for my purposes. But if I wanted to bring it to its full potential, I really need to read how to work it, and then I can maximize the potential of the item. When Klai Yisrael goes to Har Sinai, gets the Torah, when we reflect upon Yisus Mitzrayim, so that's our handbook. Hashem gave us a handbook to maximize human life. That's what it is. So when you reflect upon all the revelations of Mitzrayim and you learn the Torah, Hashem is saying, this is how you're going to maximize the potential of the human being. That's what you do. Moshe Rabbeinu, originally he began as Lo Ish Devar Manuch. He says, I have a speech impediment, I can't speak. And deep down, we can say on a deep level, means Moshe Rabbeinu cannot express full potential. Moshe Rabbeinu says, I was brought up in Paro's house, my nation's enslaved, I'm not yet able to express myself fully. I'm not Ish Devarim. I can't say the words. I can't fully bring everything out for myself. Moshe Rabbeinu, the Medrash points out that Moshe Rabbeinu in Sefer Devarim, the whole book is Elu Devarim Asher Dibar Moshe. These are the words of Moshe. So Medrash says, look, at first said Moshe Rabbeinu is Lo Ish Devarim, not a person of words. And then even an entire Sefer of Chumash, which is the words of Moshe. So what happened? Moshe is not a man of words, and then he suddenly becomes quite a man of words, a very eloquent speaker. What changed? So the Medrash says, Marpiloshen Etz Chaim. It says that the Torah, which is the Etz Chaim, the tree of life, is Marpiloshen. It heals the tongue. That's the Medrash says. So what does that mean? It's not that Moshe, we're not talking about Moshe Rabbeinu's medical issue and the Torah healed it. I don't think it means that. What it means is that Moshe Rabbeinu was somebody whose potential was suppressed. He was not yet able to bring out the full great potential of Moshe Rabbeinu. And when Moshe experienced Yisus Mitzrayim, Matan Torah, in all those years of interacting with HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the Midbar with Klal Yisrael, that brought out for Moshe Rabbeinu his full potential. He became now an Ish Devarim. He's able to bring out the full potential of Moshe Rabbeinu. Now, as an aside, there's a very famous idea from Moshe Feinstein. He asked the question. He says that on the one hand, the Torah says that nobody ever will rise like Moshe. Lo kam Yisrael kam Moshe. On the other hand, we know that I think the Rambam says, and many Mefarshim explain that anybody can strive and be great, even as great as Moshe Rabbeinu. So, what does it mean in the Torah that nobody arose like Moshe, but yet we can all strive and be great like Moshe? And the answer is the Rav Moshe Feinstein says the answer is that you have to look at it from two different perspectives. Nobody will ever reach the level of Moshe in terms of his Torah knowledge or his Nevuah. No one's going to reach that level. But in Hashem's book, greatness is not measured by quantity, it's by quality. And in terms of the quality of a person, the quality of Moshe Rabbeinu, his greatest attribute was he brought out his full potential. And we all can do that. It's really hard, we can all do that. So Moshe, at the end of his life, Moshe's greatness, certainly he was great because of the quantity of Torah he knew and his levels of Nevuah. But even greater than that, in a certain way, is that he fulfilled his full potential in life. And anybody has the opportunity to fulfill their full potential. So if we fulfill our potentials, we may not be as wise as Moshe, but we'll still be as great as Moshe because we've done our maximum. Because Moshe did his maximum. But it's all bringing out that potential. So the Sitz Mitzrayim gave us this ability that until then we were totally suppressed. We were slaves to Paro. We were slaves to the Yetzer Hara or to materialism or whatever we were slaves to. And we couldn't bring out ourselves because we were stuck. We were in Pisom. And then in the time of freedom, we opened up. And at that point, we could express our full potential. So that became Pia Chiros. The mouth became open. The idea of expression of the human being became opened up. And now we can express ourselves. So Nisan, this month, is the month of Chiros. It's when the potential within is open, is unlocked. And that's why, so in nature, suddenly everything's expressing itself. You know, the trees are bringing out their flowers, and the animals are making noise and coming out. Everything's expressing itself. Because it's a time of year of expression. So one major lesson of Nisan and a departing lesson of Pesach is that we have to realize in our own lives, if we're enslaved to something else, if something else keeps us, you know, suppresses us, we can't be who we should be and who we want to be. But if we are able to have that chirus and undo those shackles and be able to, you know, leave the bondage which we all have in our own lives, at that point we can express ourselves and fulfill our potential. That's one very important idea about Nisan. There's one perspective on this. So this first perspective would be that there's a golus of Dibor and gula of Dibor. So into Mitzrayim, Dibor, the ability of self-fulfillment, self-expression, was taken away from us. When we are freed from Mitzrayim, that ability then is released and we're able to express ourselves. Now, another point about Dibor is a very different perspective. We talk about the of speech. So speech, besides being fulfilling and expressing ourselves, speech also gives us a way to understand and explain the world. What does that mean? So until Yitzchak Mitzrayim, Hashem never spoke to the world as a whole. Hashem never made any revelation. The world knew very little about Hashem. You know, we had our individual tzaddikim who appeared here and there on the scene. You had your Noachs and your Shems and your Avrahams and your Chanuchs, but ultimately, there's no communication between Hashem and the world, and there was no way for us to really explain world events. The world was in a confused state. You know, there was really nothing for us to do to understand what this world is, where is it going, why are these things happening. Hashkacha, we didn't know about Hashkacha, we didn't know about purpose, we didn't know about anything. Lamashal, let's say you open up like a newspaper. So you see a picture in the paper of, let's say you have a man lying in rubble. So that could be a number of things. It could be that there was a building collapse. It could be there was a terror attack. Could be that this person is an actor and this is a movie set. And he's laying in the rubble because he's performing for a movie. It could be that he's a construction worker and he's taking a nap. You know, there's a lot of things it could be. So how do you know what the picture really is? So you look at the caption, right? And the caption will tell you, you know, a tired construction worker taking a nap in the rubble of the Wheaton Library, you know, and you'll have that over there. But the caption really tells you what's happening. So if we take the idea of a caption, so unfortunately captions very often are misleading and wrong. We've seen that many times in the papers. But if you have an accurate caption, you know what the picture's supposed to be. And that gives you an idea of what's happening. So you talk about the world. You look around at world events. And we say, I don't know what this event is all about. I'm not sure what the purpose of it is. I'm not sure where to go with it. And if we had a caption, if Hashem would give us captions on historical events, we would know much better what the world's all about. I guess we all appreciate captions on events. You know, if we were able to have a caption on the different things we see in the papers from Hashem, the real caption, we'd feel much better, we'd have more clarity in life. That's how we'd feel. So before Yitzchak Mitzrayim, when there's no communication between the world and Hashem, so the world's confused. Everything was a picture without a caption. It'd be that picture of the man lying in the rubble, but no caption under it. So you'd be forced to figure out in your own mind. It's one of 10 possibilities what's happening over here, but I'm not sure what it is. And Yitzchak Mitzrayim and onwards, so Hashem makes a gilui, revelation, and he speaks to the world. And that's supposed to be for us the tool to decode the mysteries of life, of current events, of history, of our personal lives. We could see Hashkacha. So when we see Dibor, we talk about the idea of speech. So the idea of speech could also mean not just our own self-expression, but the speech of HaKadosh Baruch Hu down to the world. When we were slaves in Mitzrayim, the world was in Golus. There was no sense of Hashem communicating and helping us explain life. And we left Mitzrayim, at that point we had the tools, we had the decoder in order to explain what life's all about. That's what we had. This comes through Hashem's revelation in terms of His greatness in Mitzrayim. Hashem Mitzrayim showed us who He was, what He's all about. So now when I see events, I know there's Hashkacha involved. And it came through the Torah, because the Torah teaches us how to understand world events. We personally can't do this all the time, but great Gedolim, when they see things happen in current events or history, they're able to put a caption on. They can tell us, this is why it happened. As time goes on, we have less and less Gedolim who are willing to do that, because it takes a great person to really tell us why this happened. I'm not aware of any at least recognized Gedol that would come out and tell us why was there a Holocaust. I'm not aware of a person like that. But you go back historically, you had times in history where great tragedies happened to Klal Yisrael, and Gedolim were able to come out and say, this is what happened, this is why it happened. Not because they had Nevuah, the Nevi'im did it, because they had Nevuah. Even after that, because people who had tremendous Das Torah were able to see through the lenses of Torah why Hashem did what He did, and that helps us to decode history. Like for instance, the terrible decrees which happened in Gzeros Tach V'Tat in 1640-1649 in Ukraine, which left thousands of Jews killed and maimed. There was very terrible destruction, and the great Gadol, the Tosfos Yom Tov, he came out and he said that this happened because people were speaking during davening. That's what he said. Now, he has to be very confident in what he's saying to blame Klal Yisrael for such terrible tragedies, because we know that things happen because of our Averus. We know that. How did he know that? Well, he was a great Talmud Chacham and a great Gadol. He's able to put a caption on the event. We don't always have captions put on the events because we're not on a level where we can fully understand it. But the Torah is given to us as a tool that we should be able to do that. If somebody who is well-versed in Torah, and someone who's a great tzaddik, and is able, who sat and learned Torah for many, many years, that person should be able to look at the world and be able to put captions upon the events. One of the great Gedolim, pre and post World War II, Rav Matto Pogromanski, who was not so well-known, he was a tremendous genius. He was respected by many, many of the Gedolim in Europe. He was much younger than them. So many stories about him, and both before and after the war. He died fairly young, I think in France or something. After the war, he moved to France, something like that. But he used to, whenever things were happening during the Holocaust, he'd always have a pasuk to apply to the event. He would say, I don't see boots of Germans, I see this pasuk from Yechezkel happening. He would say things like that, because he had the ability to understand that anything happening to Klal Yisrael is a result of Nevuah. And he put a caption on it. And, whether the event is tragic or it's a very, very happy event, we want to know why Hashem is having it happen. We want to know the purpose of it. So some Gedolim can take a pasuk and say this pasuk applies to this event, and we know this is the caption on the event. Yeah?
So Rabbi Avigdor Miller wrote a book, A Divine Madness. Have you seen that book?
No, I haven't.
So it's actually was written many years ago, but they wouldn't publish it because it is a commentary on the Holocaust.
Oh, wow.
And why the Holocaust happened.
Uh-huh.
And it's called A Divine Madness, and it's very scary. And he goes through exactly what you're talking about, all the different things that happened in the Holocaust and why they happened.
Right, wow.
And they didn't want to publish it because they were afraid that it would come across like he was blaming somehow, the Klal Yisrael, which in some ways he is, based on what he's talking about in terms of the history of what was going on at that particular time,
right,
where
yeah.
what originated in Germany and all that kind of stuff, but it's a very worthwhile book to read.
So I guess they published it by now, or not?
They did publish it.
You read it, apparently.
Yeah, I read it.
Right.
But it's a very worthwhile book to have in your library and read.
Yeah, I'd like to see
it. In terms of Holocaust literature.
Right. Interesting. Divine Madness.
A Divine Madness. Mm-hmm. I'll try to remember to bring it next week.
I'll take a look. Thank you. So I don't mean only to apply it to tragic events, it's also to happy events, any events, but the point is that the Torah should have for us commentary on world events, because the Torah taught Hashem's revelation of how to understand the world. So I'm just bringing examples of tragic events, but it should happen at any event in life. We want that commentary. We want that caption. So when the Dibur is in Golos, it means that we have no captions. We have no clue how to understand anything happening in the world. When the Dibur comes out of Golos, that means that we're able to actually put captions on life's events and understand what's happening, why is it happening, where is it going, what's the purpose of it. We should be able to do that. So sometimes it's easier than others, but it's there, and the tools are there. And if we look into the Torah with enough depth, we can always understand what's happening in the world. The truth is, if you listen very carefully, we know that the whole world really speaks to Hashem. Now, we mentioned before, you walk outside and you hear all the birds chirping and everything else. We know it's Pirkei Shira. Pirkei Shira, which has become more popular, I think, in recent years. Pirkei Shira tells us the different songs of nature, of the mountains, and of the lakes, and the rivers, and the animals, and the songs of nature. Some of them are to say Pirkei Shira daily, or weekly, or monthly. I mean, it's a segula for certain things in Pirkei Shira. But how do we understand Pirkei Shira? I mean, do we really think that the elephant's sitting there and singing to Hashem all day long? Well, what does it mean exactly? So there's different explanations given, but I have to understand it. Something else many people say, which is that it's not the idea of the elephant singing to Hashem, but it's that when we see the elephant, we're supposed to now understand that the existence of this elephant itself is a praise to Hashem, meaning that the human being is able to express praise to Hashem by perceiving what's happening around him. That's what we're supposed to do. So when I see an elephant, so the shear of the elephant is pretty easy to remember. It's Ma Rav Masech Hashem, how great are your deeds Hashem? It's the biggest, how large are your deeds Hashem? It's the largest land animal. So when I see an elephant, so I'm supposed to now understand the existence of this elephant is there sending me a message about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's speaking. The elephant's existence is speaking to me. And I'm looking at the world, and I'm able to understand the message the world is giving me by seeing what's around. So every animal has its shira, which means the very existence of this animal, my perception of this animal, should then bring me to understand this message about HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the idea of shira. So we know that Pesach culminates in the idea of shira. Az Yashir Moshe. The Moshe and Israel, they sing a song. And the idea of shira is that shira is supposed to bring out really all the elements we spoke about when it comes to Dibor. Shira, on the one hand, explains the magnificent Ashkacha of Hashem. You know, the Shira was able to take all the pieces of Yetzias Mitzrayim, all the Makos, and all the miracles, and kind of weave them together into one beautiful piece of poetry praising HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's what Shira does. So that was that type of expression. It was putting a caption on the events that I see. All these events are HaKadosh Baruch Hu's Ashkacha, bringing us to really to Eretz Yisrael and Beis HaMikdash, it says in the Shira. Tavienu Sitzei Eimu HaNachalascha, you should bring us and plant us on your holy mountain in Yerushalayim. So that was a commentary. That was a caption. And Shira also helps us bring out our own personal self-expression. We know that people express themselves through song and poetry, through their deepest emotions and thoughts and feelings. And when Klai Yisrael stood there saying Shira, they were on the one hand commenting upon the historical events and seeing the Ashkacha in it. On the other hand, they were bringing out the deepest feelings of themselves, expressing themselves as human beings. In Mitzrayim, they could not sit there and sing Shira to Hashem because they would have been whipped and beaten by their slave drivers. Now that they've left, they can express themselves and express what they really feel and what they really want in life. So these are the two, I'm sure there's more ideas, but two ideas of this idea of Golos HaDibor, the Dibor was in exile, is number one, personal self-expression, and number two, Hashem's conversation and captions upon world events to understand the world. And this is a concept of, we opened up in song and in speech after left Mitzrayim. This happened, we know, in the Midbar, the Midaber, Midbar. As left Piyach Yiros, on the Sfas Hayam, on the lips of the sea. And that's where we're saying Az Yashir. The idea of Yashir, commentaries all say Yashir is future tense. Az Yashir, then he will sing, is the literal translation of it. And one concept of Yashir is that the idea of Az Yashir is it's not the song that was sung that one time, it's that at that point the whole Bria opens up in song. At this point, from then on, from that point history and onwards, everything's able to sing. Everything can express its message and its praise of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So back to the month of Nisan. So Nisan outside, the world is chirping and rustling. And it's the concept of the Dibor being opened up in life and opened up in the Bria. Very fascinating is that we mentioned that every month has its letter, every month has its action, has its shevet. So the action of Nisan as quoted in the Sefer Yetzirah, is sicha, is speech. The Sefer Yetzirah says that Nisan is connected to speech. Also, Nisan is connected in terms of letters. The letter He is the letter of Nisan. So what's the letter He? So many Sfarim point out that speech begins with the He. He is just the breath. So your mouth forms it into different types of letters. You know, people who are involved in speech therapy know where to put your tongue and, you know, how everything forms the actual sounds. But the core of speech is the hey, it's that breath. And when that breath comes out, you're able to form it into words. So the actual letter of Nisan itself is the letter which actually creates any form of dibor, any form of speech. That's the letter of Nisan is. So nature is speaking and singing. Klal Yisrael is singing. The action of the month is sicha, and the letter of the month is the hey, it's the core of speech. And that's what Nisan is all about. So we as Jews, we now have access to express ourselves and to develop our potential because we're free. And we also have the ability to put words to life's events. On Pesach, on Shabbos Chol Hamoed, we read Shir HaShirim. And some have meant to say Shir HaShirim after the Seder. I've never actually achieved that. I mean, at that point, I don't know. I'm not sure anybody does. But there's a minute to say Shir HaShirim after the Seder. And Shir HaShirim, as we read before, describes the blossoming of spring. And Shir HaShirim is a song. It's the song of songs, the time that we're able to bring out the full expression of our emotion in terms of love and connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So this is, I think, the concept of Golos Dibor and Gulos HaDibor. The Dibor was in Golos, then Dibor becomes Gula. Dibor is redeemed. So in our cycle of the year, then we move from the silent winter into the sounds of spring. So for us, it's a call. The call to us is that we should tap into this concept. The concept that now is a time, you know, even if one feels down and depressed in the cold, dark, silent winter when nature outside is dark and we feel dark inside, now is our chance to kind of rise to the occasion and open up and express ourselves, both in terms of self-expression and in terms of the ability to see Hashgacha. We mentioned many times that darkness always represents the lack of seeing Hashem, the confusion in life, and light represents Hashem's presence and Hashem's Hashgacha. So we're now in the months where the light is primary. Days are longer than nights, the sun is shining, we hope, and that to us should be a call that we should now focus on seeing more of Hashem and more Hashgacha in our lives in the Bria.